This is an Awakening Zone presentation, human empowerment radio and media for the 21st century and beyond.
Welcome to the Awakening Zone. I'm excited to be here. I'm Linda Benyo, and I'm going to be your moderator as we journey into this unique topic of life as a spirit channeler. This is featuring Lee Carroll and Jeffrey Hoppe. We're excited about this episode with Lee Carroll, the channeler for Kryon, and Jeffrey Hoppe, the channeler for Adama St. Germain. We're going to talk about life as a spirit channeler. Lee and Jeff both come from conventional backgrounds, successful careers in the business world, and then one day they find themselves doing this thing called channeling. Channeling is when a human connects with an angelic being and then delivers their message. It can be done in written, verbal, musical, or other communication methods. It's similar to the way an interpreter translates a message from a person speaking one language to people speaking another language. But in this case, it's a human, such as Lee or Jeff, interpreting the message for the angelic beings into the human language. Now, they travel the world, publish books, offer insightful spiritual guidance as full-time channelers. Lee and Jeffrey will share what it's like to have an angelic entity for a partner, including their profound and humorous experiences as two of the most well-known spirit channelers in the world today. Lee Carroll is the channeler for Kryon. His work is now over 20 years old, starting Lee in 1989. The Kryon work represents 12 Kryon channeled books. These books represent over 200 physical separate Kryon publications, since these works are now published in 24 languages worldwide. In addition, Lee Carroll and his spiritual partner, Jan Tober, introduced the Earth to the term Indigo Children. In 1999, with the book by Hay House, The Indigo Children was an amazing creation. There are now 3 Indigo Children books by Lee and Jan. This brings the total of Lee Carroll books to 15. Lee travels over 125,000 miles per year, bringing the Kryon message of love to people around the world. Really, over 125,000 miles per year. And you can find Lee at www.kryon.com. We're also going to be talking to Jeffrey Hoppe. He's the channeler for Adama St. Germain. He's been channeling since 1999, first with Tobias, and since 2009 with Adama St. Germain. The Crimson Circle is a worldwide organization with live monthly webcasts, over 500,000 visitors per month on the main website, translations in over 22 languages, and nearly 600 teachers certified to teach the Crimson Circle courses all over the world. Author of 4 books translated into 8 languages. Jeff travels also over 125,000 miles per year, bringing the Adama message of awakening and enlightenment to audiences around the world. You can find that at www.crimsoncircle.com. Welcome, Lee. Welcome, Jeff. How are you tonight, Lee?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you. That was very well delivered.
Thank you.
I don't think I've ever heard you talk, you know, without being interrupted for so that amount of time. It was really good. Thank you. Great to be here. This is so much fun, guys. I love this.
Well, I'm sorry. I was falling asleep there, but great. And thank you, Linda, for the wonderful opening. It's good to be here with the three of us. Go back quite a few years. You know, we've been together and doing this work for a long time, and it's really good to be here on this.
You know what that opening didn't say, Jeff? The opening was all about us, and it wasn't anything about Linda, and she stands right next to you on stage and presents. And I'd like people to know that she's just an integral part of the Crimson Circle. And although we're the interviewees tonight and she is the interviewer, it'd be fun sometime to just hit her down and let us pummel her with questions.
Oh, I would love to do that.
Right.
Hey, that's more fun. Let's not do the show.
You'll just do that now?
That's
right.
Interviewing Linda's show.
Might be interesting.
Anyway, it is good to be here. And I wanted to point out for the listeners a couple of things. This is coming through on the Awakening Zone Radio Network. And if you're listening on Blog Talk or something else, come on over to Awakening Zone. You'll find a whole lineup of great hosts like Lee Carroll, Steve Rother, Pepper Lewis, ourselves and many others, but we invite you to come over to awakeningzone.com.
You've got international authors, too, in other languages now.
We do.
Oh,
you know, and really that was the intent of Awakening Zone to begin with, was to be global. We have shows in French, Italian, Hungarian, Spanish.
Polish.
Yeah, I mean, just it's
Japanese.
It's really something else.
It's got to be one of the big, if not the biggest, spiritual networks around.
We're really proud of it, and particularly that it's all free. All the content is free to listeners. And the hosts aren't charged for their shows, and we're going to keep it that way. We love it that way. But, you know, I wanted to point out that we're doing this show. It's kind of a prelude to what we're going to be doing down in Sedona in June. I think it's June 14th through the 16th. We're doing something together called the Sedona Experience. And it's going to feature, of course, you, Lee, and Linda and I, the music with Yoham out of Israel.
Oh, he's so good.
Oh, they're fun. They're fun. We just did a gig with them down in Brazil about a week ago, as a matter of fact, and it was fun, really good. And also Peggy Phoenix DeBro is going to be there.
She's a guest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say that I got to say that Sedona is going to be, you know, an event with my two favorite Chandlers.
And I'm looking forward to it. You know, we don't often get to, I don't often get to have as much fun as I want to on stage because I'm usually directing my own gigs from the back, you know, and people know that. And I'm kind of a control freak when it comes to my shows. And this is going to be fun because I'm going to let you do the work. I'm just going to just show up and do my thing, and I think it's going to be great.
It will be, and actually we've worked on stage together before, but never just the two of us. There's always been a lot of other people, presenters.
That's right.
But this will be our first time together, and, you know, I actually haven't gotten any insights yet from Adamus of what he's going to do. I don't know if Cryan has talked about it. A lot of times these things just come in the moment.
I think Adamus is a lot more in the moment than Cryan, actually.
Yeah. It's scary.
Does he tell you what to wear?
He tells
you,
yes.
I thought so.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that could explain it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, actually, you know, he's Adamus is a real character, but he would have me wearing 17th century period costumes.
Yeah,
and once in a while he comments on my dress. He says, like, you look like a yuppie at summer camp, or one time he said, well, dress up. You know, I wish you guys, all of you, the audience and me, would dress up. So the next month, Linda came in a beautiful dress. She looked elegant and gorgeous, and I came in a suit and tie. And he said, no, not like you're going to church. I mean, dress up, wear a costume, you know, wear a funny hat, you know. But,
he's quite the entertainer.
He's quite the entertainer.
Mm-hmm. I love it. That's what makes this fun. We just don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
Oh, I think we're going to discuss some of that today.
All right, let's discuss it.
Let's go.
Okay, so this is the easiest question of all. For each of you, how did you get started in this work? I mean, you know, what do you have to do? Do you have to have a special gift or a talent to become a channeler? And what was this like for you? How did you end up being channelers? I love knowing this.
You want me to start?
Sure, you
when
start.
When it comes to these questions, we can go back and forth on who starts if you want to.
Yeah,
but I want to make this short because we've actually done whole programs on this one. And both Jeff and I come out of business backgrounds doing other things. We're not highly metaphysical people, either of us, actually. In my case, I was an engineer, and I'd had a career of almost 20 years worth. And the story is legendary. Is that it came through another channel. His name was Frank Alper. He's deceased now, and I always remember Frank. Because I was dragged to a channel where he actually told me what I was going to do. 3 years later, another guy who was much younger than Frank told me the same identical thing. This is when I started looking at it. When I started looking at it, it actually started to take place. And then the big thing is, I will say, I allowed it to take place. Mm-hmm. That is to say that there is a, you know, we have to give permission. These are not takeovers. It's not things that, happen to us without our knowledge. And it was a gradual, very gradual system which created belief, and that's the next stage. And that what I've said, where you go from perhaps a complete unbeliever, and then you get personal truth. explain to you. And then the rest is history. And then, you know, that's when the career began, and very, very slowly we gathered people and started from there.
And my side is actually interesting because I was in the aviation business. It was a startup company and working a lot of hours. And it was actually the one of the first spiritual, metaphysical things I'd ever read was a book called The End Times by Lee Carroll, by Yuli. And I read that, and it just blew my mind. And it was a couple years later that, you know, we got to know each other and working together. But it was a couple years later that I was on a business trip on a flight home one night, and a voice came in very clear, very, very loud, and outside of me, you know, not inside the head voice, said, "I'm Tobias. I'm here to start working with you." And I wasn't, at the point, certainly wasn't expecting to do channeling. I thought he was more like a spirit guide working with me, helping me out. And we chatted for about a year before I told anybody about it.
And, I love that part.
And, you know, but in a way it was, I didn't want to share it because it was so personal, deep, and beautiful. I didn't want anybody ridiculing me for it. And Tobias never said anything about channeling or whatever. When I finally told Linda about it, she asked me, "Well, can I talk to Tobias?" And I thought, "Well, geez, I don't know how to do that." But sat down one day in the living room, and she started asking questions. And I remember how awkward it felt for the first time to have to be translating these words, to be bringing Tobias through. And it just felt so rough, and I didn't like having to talk. Because I was used to carrying on with Tobias in my own way, but through practice and that, I got used to it. But to answer your question, Linda, no, I didn't have any special gifts or talents. Wasn't spiritual, wasn't religious or anything. So it was really quite a shock.
You know what, Jeff, I'm going to insert this because as we talk, I think that things come up that I don't think I've ever verbalized it before. This interesting process of what becomes our truth and when we cling to it as our truth. Mm-hmm. Because both of us, coming from very, you know, very practical, if not scientific backgrounds, would have to go a stretch in order to get to this place where we believe it. And there has to be a point at which it becomes personal to us. I can remember when mine was, when I could say, "Now I believe it." And you can't prove it to anybody, and it's nobody's truth but yours. But this is and maybe people are listening who are channeling or want to be channeling, don't have that yet. And I'm going to say it comes. It comes with time and practice, and with intent. But it's an interesting thing to me as when that occurs and how it works in us.
But, you know, and I knew I was channeling, and of course I had questions in the beginning, you know, is this just, you know, something inside of me? Am I making this up or whatever? But as I could really tell the difference between Tobias and myself, and when there would be information that I had no way of knowing, when he would talk about creation and spirit and things that I'd never studied and never had a background in, I realized one day that I was learning so much from him, and that really brought the trust and really made me realize that it was very special and very real.
Some people say that channelers are simply going inside and making up stories and things, and you just mentioned the thing that really brought it to my attention that it was outside of that was when things were brought up that we couldn't know.
Right.
And then when the information allied with what others had said, and people we didn't know from the past. So this is where it started to make sense to me.
Well, I'm amazed even to this day that in channeling Adamus, he'll say something which I'm not familiar with or aware of, and then later I'll read it somewhere else, whether it's scientific or from another channeler. And I don't know about you, Lee, but other than browsing and reading your stuff once in a while, I don't read other channeled material on purpose.
Right.
I don't want to ever think that's an influence.
And it could be. And this is what Cron told me years ago. He said, "Don't read other metaphysical books." He says, "Because you can't really control what goes in and sticks."
Right. Right.
And so it'd be nice if you just have a fresh perspective. And people think that you're on these airplanes all the time, that we got all these metaphysical books and we're just glued to them. No. And the answer is no. I'll be reading some crime novel or something.
Right. Well, you know, you and I talked one time, and you know, saying, "What do you watch? What movies do you watch when you're traveling?" And I watch chick flicks. I don't want to have to think. I know the beginning, middle, and the end.
Well, it's worse for me. I'll go right to Bruce Willis.
Right. You know. Exactly.
Now, so as a partner, I want to mention that I was fairly aware that Jeff was channeling and laughing because people say, well, how do you know it's real? Mm. It's like, wow, when the words come out of his mouth and it disagrees with what Jeff told me and agrees with what I said, I know my husband's channeling.
And, you know, the cadence is different.
Yeah.
Everything is different from, especially when he's your partner, has been your partner like forever. Didn't you get married when you're six or something? I forget. and you have this situation where he's channeling. That has to be hard for you anyway, Linda, because you want to smirk and go, yeah, sure, but you don't. And suddenly.
No, she does.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I do. I'm known for it.
Sorry, I had a little froggy I'm dealing with. I mean, it's not a pet or anything. It's in my And to have, you'll notice that there's a difference in countenance, delivery. Mm-hmm. Some have even said that there's an inflections that sometimes will change a little bit, mm-hmm. and that you're aware that it's just different. It's different than the guy you married. You know?
No, and Lee, you know, the thing I noticed about you right after a channel, your eyes are different.
Yours are too, Jeff.
Yeah.
They're all bloodshot and stuff. No.
No, they have a different kind of the iris is different.
And it's almost like the look in your eye is just going right into me. Mm-hmm. And it's very different. And even your complexion, your face makeup, your muscle structure changes when you're channeling. Not to a huge degree, but
a little
obvious.
Bit. Yeah. Because you're getting a different reality.
Right.
When you're there, and you don't, you know, the last thing I wanted to do, and Linda hasn't even asked these questions yet, we're answering them.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be as strange as I saw on television. I saw people channeling on television. I'm glad their face were all screwed up, and they had funny little accents, and, well, I mean, I have channel friends who have accents, but they're like, they're authentic, you know, and these were obviously not, and they just look like fools, and I mean, I said to Spirit early on, I don't want to be a fool.
This is
part of my man brain going, you know, oh, I know how I feel about it. What's somebody going to look like? I mean, what am I going to look like to somebody else?
So, you know, this kind of brings up a question that's on the list here. So do you apparently negotiate with your entities?
I'll jump in on that one.
Negotiate your relationships.
I didn't with Tobias because he came in and, the relationship developed very naturally. But at one point I did realize that even though he had lived in the human form, had many lifetimes on Earth, it was about 2,500 years ago, and he wasn't quite up on something. So I did have to kind of remind him the difference between living now and living back then. But it was so funny that I channeled Tobias from 1999 to 2009, and then he left. He actually reincarnated, came back to Earth. And at that point, I started channeling Adamus, or also known as Adamus Saint Germain. And right before Tobias left, he said to me, he said, make sure to negotiate with Adamus. I'm like, really? Really? And he said, absolutely. You make sure to negotiate with Adamus. You tell him what you want and what you need and be very clear about it. So I went to Adamus and I said, okay, here's what I need. And amongst those things, by the way, was things like abundance. I don't want to have to worry about paying bills. Health and energy. I want my health to be balanced. I want to have the energy to do this work. Those type of things. And so I went to Adamus and told him, and he said, no.
That's not negotiation.
He really, really did. And so I kind of walked away, and then I thought, what the hell with that? And I went back, and he laughed and laughed, and he said, absolutely, you can negotiate. And he said, but you're not negotiating with me. You're negotiating with yourself.
That's right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So that was what you were negotiating with him for your change.
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned something which I've completely already forgotten. But it triggered me about what are you negotiating for and why negotiate at all? And the answer is what you said, was about the fact that they are not human. or at least not now, and you are. So you people have said, well, yeah, but they know all about you and everything else. And the answer is yes, but they are not living the kind of day-by-day 3D life that we are in the time frame we are. And so the energies we represent on the other side of the veil, in my opinion, are in a timeless state. They look at you, Jeff, and they see all your lives. They look at me, they see all of our lives. They address us. If they've ever done it with you, I don't know, even with names we wouldn't recognize, sometimes with energies we don't, because they know all of us.
Right.
So here we are sitting in this lifetime asking for things, and this is what they need to hear. In my case, it goes back to this, to probably my fears, and that was I didn't, your fears were you didn't want to have to struggle with money. Well, you did all this, not a fear, but it's a really concern. And for me, it was I didn't want to look stupid. I didn't. And so I made an agreement with Kryon that said, I've seen channelers, they twist around, they make funny faces, and then they're not there when they come out, they don't have no idea what's happened, it looks like a takeover, I don't want it. I said, let me be there. This is for Lee Carroll. This is not channeling 101. I'm not even sure there is one. There is every single one is completely and totally unique and independent for the human being and the partner. So I'm in this negotiation, and I say, if you want me to do this out loud in front of people, I want to be there. I want to see what's going on so that I'm normal and I can, and no matter what happens, I'll know what's happening. And if anything else, I mean, anything inappropriate happens, I can back it out right now. I can stop it. I've never had to, by the way.
So they did own up to the normal part.
Yeah. So this was my negotiation. I also told Klein, I said, don't let me know the potentials of what might happen because I'll probably say no. Because if I look backwards and I said, I'm going to be doing this today, what I'm doing today, back then I would have said no. Because it would have been too scary, I wouldn't have thought I could do it, and all the other things that you go through as a human being. So, yeah, there's negotiation.
Yeah, and I think anybody that's going into channeling would be very clear about it, and sometimes they really do lose a little bit of sight for how fast you can go, how much energy you have,
yeah,
the balance in your personal life, because they're like, great, you know, let's do this work. They don't have to sleep, eat, or pay bills, so they kind of forget, and it's very important to say
that. The other thing, too, is that when we say negotiation, we're acting like they're other humans. They're not. These are angelic, other side entities, and
right,
that means that this everything that goes on is done in such such unconditional love for us,
right,
in my opinion. And so they're looking at us, and they want to give us what we need. They want to make it easy for us to do the work, and so this is where it's coming from. There's never a give and take, and like there would be in a business relationship where somebody gets something and somebody else doesn't and loses whatever. No, it's a negotiation about reality. You know, what are your filters? What are your fears? How can we make it so that you can do this better?
And I think ultimately, too, it's really more about what we're telling ourselves. In other words, saying, you know, I don't want to look like a fool on stage, or I don't want to have to worry about bills, or you know, I just need the energy, and it's more saying that to ourselves. This is what I'm going to choose if I'm going to do this work.
Everybody knows that life choices are made this way, whether you're an Alcoholics Anonymous or whether you're pasting notes on the refrigerator for yourself if you're on a diet. You do this. You negotiate with yourself in order to get the things that you know you can do.
Right.
It's not a lot different from that, except you're dealing now with another energy that is helping you, and the two of you are trying to reshape your own brain. So what's going on?
Yeah.
I like this.
Wake up, Linda.
No, I was listening to you because I find both of you so intriguing, honestly. And I had I actually lost a question that was just sitting there, but so what I just heard that was kind of interesting is that both of you went through an experience where you actually were invited to truly take care of yourselves if you were truly going to do this work, not to totally sacrifice yourself. I like that.
No, there was never a sacrifice. Now, if you had talked to me earlier in May, I would have said there was a sacrifice because I got weird. But that's my that's my perception. You got to understand. There's a lot of people studying to get weird. I mean, to me, it was not. So I don't. You wasn't a sacrifice, Jeff? Was it for you? Really?
No, I don't feel there were sacrifices. The I think the one thing that's the hardest right now is just the extensive traveling, and traveling is hard on the body. And, you know, I love doing the workshops. I mean, I just love it, being with the people.
We really do.
Our workshops are generally like 3 days, and, you know, or we just came back from an Egypt trip, 12 days, and, oh, man, just to be with everybody, and I just love. But the no sacrifice, no. I'd have to actually say the one thing that I probably don't do enough of, and Lee, I imagine it's the same with you, but I don't take enough personal time for myself.
I'm learning more. I won't go to a place now unless I do some excursions.
And
whether I'm alone or whatever, I want to see where I am, and it helps me to unravel too.
Right.
You know, my sacrifice, and I'm realizing it now, is if I had been told I would lose most of my friends, I probably would have said no.
Right.
Friends are important. Oh, yeah. I lost all of them.
Yeah.
I was one. There's not one. And a lot of them, and the thing that, it's a hard word for me even to say, it's almost like betrayal, because I look at these fine Christian men who I used to associate with, and the love of God is very important in their life. As soon as they found out what I was doing, I was out of the club.
Mm.
And everything in me wants to tell them that I love God like they do, and I'm just not acceptable because I'm not doing it their way. And so I lost them. And these are guys who, I mean, the godfather of one of their children.
Okay.
These are guys, I love these guys. And to this day, there's been no contact. This has been 20 years.
No Christmas cards, no nothing.
Oh, no. And, I mean, I found out the other day one of their fathers had died. I knew this man, and I was so crushed that he was gone and was not informed, and the guy didn't call me. He could have called me, you know, in his grief and just said, at least share this moment with me.
Yeah.
And I'm just off the radar. And so I had to turn a page. And it didn't happen all at once. It happened slowly. And you might say it was a sacrifice, but, boy, the ones I've picked up, I have made up for it. And it's and part of that is you guys and the family that I have through the staffs of you and the staffs that I have, and all, it's just made up for it.
Well, and actually the one thing, Lee, that we always comment about is you put together such a family over the years, and, you know, there's so many people that you're associated with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a, you know, when you look at it, like Steve Rother, who, you know, with Lightworker.com, and Peggy DeBrow, and Todd Obakaitis, you know, we all met through you because of you, and the family's just kind of extended out and out. So
these are some
of
the weirdest people on the planet you've just listed.
Yes,
I'm so proud of that now. Yes. Yeah. No.
But it was funny with ourselves. It was a little easier because we were down in Texas, and right about the time we met you and we started getting involved in all this, and I started talking to Tobias. Actually, we moved from the Dallas-Fort Worth area up to Boulder, Colorado, so we kind of left our friends behind at that time when we were just getting into it. But
by coincidence.
But then our family stopped talking to us.
Definitely never talked to us.
Oh, you're from Texas. That's Texas wants to be another country, but they really are part of the Bible Belt. So
definitely
they are. Now, when you so people would like to know, is the entity that you know that you work with always around? I mean, how do you control that? Do you control that?
Who wants to go?
You.
Either.
Go ahead.
To what extent you will allow it? Yes. And when I started, it was very 3D. I turned it on, I turned it off. And this is what I thought was appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is just the way I thought that reality would be. I'd go to a meeting, Klein would come to channel, I'd sit down in the chair, turn him on, he'd be over, I'd turn him off.
Mm-hmm.
When I wanted to know stuff, I'd go in the shower, turn him on, you know.
That sounds and a little weird, Lee.
Yeah, you know what I mean. It's like a switch inside, and you're going, it's like, we do this as churchgoers. You may not be, but we do this. We dress up, we go to worship service, we sit, and we're different people. You know, I've seen this all my life. You know, and then you come home, and then you put on your shorts, you've been to church, now you're not that person who was in the pew. And so we do this, and this is kind of like American Training 101. And I just brought it right into the metaphysics. In about 4 years or or more into that later cry and said, are you ready to go to the next step? And I said, what is that? He says, would you allow me to be present all the time? And I said, really? And that was a big step. So this was an evolution of my growth. Now the answer is all the time, right now. If thoughts pop into me, just as Jeff's going to tell you the same thing, if thoughts pop in that need to be said or whatever, or there's instructions or guidance or more than that, manifestation, creation, all the things we teach, it's there ready to go, and bam, it happens.
Yeah. Mm. But and Linda, when I started working with Tobias, I mean, I wasn't channeling right away, and I was used to him being there every day. We had our he was taking me through spiritual boot camp every night on my way home, driving from my office to the house, which was about an hour. So I got very used to him being around a lot, and you know, he was there every day. We would talk, and he was like a really, really good friend. You know, kind of like,
yeah, I got that
grandfatherly energy, and we were best buddies. I mean, it's kind of the Harvey thing. You know, I had this best invisible buddy, and you know, I was very used to it. When Tobias left and Adamus came in, Adamus changed that. I didn't even think about it, but Adamus is like, okay, I'm going to come in and do the channel, and then I'm leaving. You have a life to and a business and everything else. I'm leaving, and I'll come in and talk to you, you know, on a need-to-know basis, like particularly on long airplane flights he comes in. Or, Linda, I know this irritates you, but right at night when I first lay down, he loves to come in to chat for a little bit.
Annoys me.
But he's not there all the time, not nearly as much as Tobias. And I actually really was a little depressed after Tobias left because I was so used to that, you know, my invisible buddy, and Adamus wasn't hanging around all the time. And I have tremendous respect for Adamus St. Germain, but he's not the friend, the close personal friend like Tobias was.
Lee, Tobias used to hang around our bedroom, and I used to like, come on, go. I mean, go away. I get a moment to myself here. Did you experience anything like that ever?
No, in fact, I was thinking, we ought to do a show. You're one of the first people that because I know the integrity of your work and your channel, that I could ask these kinds of things, and that's what it's like to change in midstream. And I was there.
Yeah.
I was there, and I mean, I saw things that most people don't even know that you were going through. Mm-hmm. There was a time I think during the whole ceremony when you just wanted to shut down and go home.
Yep. Cry. Yeah.
And so this had to be like a major deal. It's just, it's like a forced divorce in love. And it's just really, I never experienced anything like it. I don't want to, Jeff. So I know you did. It's just part of your growth cycle. And I know it was also part of everything that Tobias knew and wanted for what he did. And just the thought, it's got to bring tears to your eyes that he's back.
Yeah,
he's here, and yeah, you know it, and you probably even know who he is. So it's just got to be just really interesting, because that I have never had that.
You know, and it's funny, he left in 2009, and like you said, you were there for the whole part of it. And, you know, I have not heard from him since, which was very strange, you know, being with him every day, learning so much from him, and having no contact other than one time last summer. I was working up at my barn one afternoon, just, you know, not thinking about anything in particular, and suddenly I just felt this tremendous warmth and this kind of golden light all around me, and there were no words spoken, but I just knew it was Tobias, and he was smiling saying, cool dude, you made it. It was really, really special.
I think that's that same feeling that some of us have who now understand what happens when there's death, and when you have those kinds of things from your parents if they're deceased, and you get those little moments. If you're a woman, sometimes it's your mom. If you're dad, for a man, and they're few, far and few between. But when they happen, there's just no question who it is.
It was so beautiful. Yeah.
Right.
And once Tobias left, it took about 5-6 months for me to get comfortable working with Adamus. He had a different style. You know, Tobias is closed-eyed and Adamus is open-eyed, walking around. Adamus is pretty brash, and really push my buttons. Actually, I'll admit that the first few months I didn't like it one bit, and I didn't really question whether I wanted to really keep going with it because it was so different, and it was pushing my boundaries, my limits.
Mm-hmm.
But then I suddenly got to understand what Adamus was doing, his style, his pushing, and his deep, deep love for humans, especially those who are going through awakening. And he comes in a pretty direct manner, but he's doing it to try to get us out of our lull, our sleep, and try to keep us moving through this awakening and enlightenment process.
It's all enlightenment and staying, not leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, the like definition of ascension, is always leaving.
Right.
Instead of evolving and staying,
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all about embodied enlightenment now. Staying in the body and as an enlightened master.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what a concept.
What a concept. Every master told us that.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just realized it.
So, we have some things we're going to talk about, and we've already been covering it, but, what was it like, with your family and friends, what was that like to try to, explain that to people? People love to hear that.
In terms of, telling them what we did or handling how they felt about what we did?
Well, I experienced it as your partner. I mean, I even have people that I hadn't heard of, heard from in years and years that, went on, Googled my name and found out what I was doing with you, and it's like, oh my God, what are you doing?
That's the hell of Google these days.
Oh my God.
But, I was still in the business world when I was starting to do this, and I didn't make a big deal of it, but I didn't hold back either. I didn't hide it. And I think that's probably why I got fired from the company I started, but that was a good thing also. In terms of our families, Linda and I both come from big families, and at first you could just hear the family gatherings. They're all back up in the Midwest, and you could almost feel when they got together that we were a point of discussion. And my family hasn't necessarily been critical, but I think they think it's a phase that hasn't ended after all these years. He's just going through a phase, on the other hand, a couple of my sisters will write once in a while and say, man, it's just amazing. I can't even fathom what you're doing, traveling around the world, being with people who, are on this journey. So it was interesting, but I just don't think they understand, which is okay.
Yeah, it's a question I almost want to pass on because there's some fresh stuff. I've done it for 23 years, and you evolve, and there are things that are still surprising. And my experience was different than you, very small families, but they were all born-again Christians.
Oh.
Now, I was too. I came out of that. I mean, as a good Christian guy, I went to church twice a year like everybody else, Easter and Christmas, and I professed the things that I was supposed to profess, and I was a spiritual guy in that respect, so... And so were they. And what I want to tell you was that then extended to my children and then to their children. And I would not change that because what this does is to expose them to the love of God. They see healings in their churches, all the things we teach. And so Klein has said years ago, don't tear anybody out of their church or their faith or anything else because they're looking at the same attributes you are. They just got their filter, and they want to structure it in the way they want to structure it in order to make it work for them. And I like that. I always have. What happens, however, is that down the line, every once in a while, there get some issues. And the issues that I just faced, and I'll just report it now, and who cares whether they're listening at this point in time because the deed is done. But I had to disengage from my grandchildren back in Christmas. Their mother has told them lots of things about who I was, and it made them uncomfortable to visit me and to have me visit them.
Wow.
So I could just see that it was frustrating for them. There was drama in the family because I was there.
Wow.
So if I were to disengage, they don't have to think about it. They don't have to deal with it. They don't have to explain it to their mom. They don't have to be faced with funny feelings, whether they have love for their grandfather or they don't, or whether they should or shouldn't, or whether I'm going to hell or whatever. So... I had to disengage. Now that's going to change someday, and I don't know when, but Yeah, you ask about family. That's some, this is, you know, the reason I said I might be moot and then I wasn't is because I don't want anybody to think that this is going to happen to them.
Right.
But this was my lesson, and this is I'm dealing with what I have to deal with. So, yeah, you cannot simply pretend that your friends and your family are not part of this, and they are, and they will react.
Yeah, I'm sorry you had to go through that, and
yeah.
You know, it's too bad. I hope we humanity comes to a point where they can just really have compassion and accept. But in a way, Lee, actually, I think you did a very bold thing, and you know, to give them their space. And I agree that grandkids will come back sooner or later with their own feelings and their own new level of respect.
I can also say that from different things I've done in my life, including being a school teacher, you never ever know how you're truly affecting people. That what they say and versus what they're actually feeling can sometimes be somewhat different. There can be pressures of why they won't say it at the moment, but they walk away and feel something different. And I hope that's what happens for you. And I wanted to say that I guess Jeff and I were lucky, because I remember when I asked my, you know, I was the oldest of 10, and I remember when I walked out the door, I said, well, what do you remember about me? And they said, we remember that you walked out the door saying you'd rather live in a closet than live here.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. I thought they'd remember your pencils. But that's another story, you guys. Now you have to explain your pencils. Linda collects weird pencils.
So it was, you know, so it was kind of funny. It made me laugh, so that I always learned to just, you know, I didn't have that connection. So,
yeah.
But you know, and I think whether somebody is a channeler or just really in this awakening and enlightenment within themselves, they are going to experience a lot of changes, and their friends and their jobs and the relationship with the family, it all changes. And you know, the dynamics can be hard to go through, but ultimately the changes are really good. A lot of it is karmic changes, particularly with family members.
I think I also like to tell people, just remind anybody who's listening, that we're not evangelistic.
Right.
That
right.
We hope that people come to see us who care about themselves enough to come to see us. We don't want to give them a doctrine. We don't want to change their life in ways they're not, they want to be changed. So this is not your typical 3D belief system. This is we're teaching some truths that we believe are important, and you can take them or leave them, and we got auditoriums filled with people who want to take them.
It was funny. We were being interviewed down in Brazil by a local reporter, really nice guy, but saying, how do you recruit your members? And like, well, A, we don't recruit. B, we don't have members. And he's like, well, what do you mean? Don't people join? And it's like, no. And well, how do you get, you know, people? And it's like, we don't. We have a website. You know, they come, like with you, Lee, you offer a tremendous amount of free material. They come, they read it. They may leave, go someplace else, or, they may come and see you at a workshop. But, there's no membership, there's no dues, there's no recruiting.
Right.
I've been asked, you know, well, that's not a really good – I'm the same, by the way. How could you have a business plan based on that when you don't have – you know, you're not guaranteeing return customers or anything else? And – this is where how do you explain to somebody, we are not in 3D. We have stepped out of that a long time ago.
Yeah.
We have our business plan depends on energies that that never been written down. And the only thing we can prove is that wherever we go on the planet, there are auditoriums just filled with people who want to hear these things. And you're right, we don't take their names. We don't come back and tell them they have to do this in order to do this, and then keep them in suspense until we come back. You know,
no.
We don't have any tricks. If I could just tell you, I was at my first time in Moscow. We had just an enormous auditorium, just packed with people. So I think it was 1,200 people there for our first meeting, and it was the auditorium that the government meets in, a really big one, and it was right downtown, middle of Moscow, one big hotel. We were done. We left. We heard 2 weeks later that the government had asked us not to come back to that auditorium. And we said, what did we do wrong? And we had a dialogue with them. And they said, you didn't do anything wrong, except we can't figure out what you're doing.
Oh, interesting.
Because there's no way you could have got that many people doing what you did without a gimmick. And we can't figure it out. So we know you're doing something.
Wow.
But we don't want to have to figure it out. So please don't come back. So we changed venues for that.
Wow.
Do you see the mindset there?
Yeah.
There's got to be a trick. You know, people look at what we do and they say, how are you making your money? I'm not afraid to talk about it. But it's an exchange. It's like you come to the seminar and you get something.
Right.
And then we do it again. You know, we don't string you along for a course that's going to last for a year or something like that. There's nothing wrong with that if it's a course that you want to take. But we don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, you guys give courses and people come and take them and then they get their stuff and they leave.
You come and go, yeah.
Yeah, they come and they go. It's just not a thing.
There's no requirement that you have to take this course in order to take that course to go to the next level.
Exactly.
You know, and like I said, I love what you do on your website. Tremendous amount of stuff for free and you know, if somebody wants to come and see you in person, great. But, you know, they can also study right on your website.
This is how we make our money. Is that we charge for attendance to see us, or for lessons online, or these kinds of things. And that's the extent of it. There's no gimmick. I think what I would call it is a win-win. Everybody, there's a free exchange. People get what they want.
Yeah.
Now, Lee, I can see this is kind of funny because when Jeff channeled Tobias, it was close eye, but now he channels open eye. Now, it's kind of interesting to me because one of the funny things, Jeff didn't like it, but one of the funny things you didn't like it at all. But
no.
One of the things that's funny based on what you just said is since he started channeling open eye, it used to be when he was close eye, people would walk through and they would like, what's going on? How weird. And now because he's got his eyes open, people have no idea.
Going, what's going on? This is weird.
No, they have no idea. You're just a speaker.
Just lecturing, right.
Yeah, so maybe that's an advantage I didn't even consider.
I think it really is. And when I look at, for instance, when I watch Pepper Lewis, and this is one of the most amazing channels on the planet, by the way, and when I watch her walking around for hours, and taking questions out in the audience and that kind of a thing. I think that this really does service a certain kind of people who need to have that and experience that. And people will walk through there and not even know what she's doing.
Yeah.
Now, I know that you can be subject to negativity and attacks. And if this happens, I mean, has this happened to you? And, you know, what was that like?
You?
With the work.
Jeff, me?
Go ahead.
There have been seminars where we have had hecklers. I think you probably have had two.
Yeah.
And, that's not all of that difficult to take care of because the majority of the audience is with you.
Right.
And when you know that as a leader, all you have to do is certain kinds of things and the audience will pressure them to stop. But we had a major event and I know you guys were aware of it and I'll remind you, maybe you can tell me the year it was, but it's got to be about 15 years ago or something, where we had a metaphysical author and leader in the United States take me to task.
I remember
and
that.
And put out flyers by the hundreds saying that I was the evil of the century. And tried to shut me down. They just tried to stop the cry on wagon. And it was shocking. I can remember the weeks in my life where I couldn't believe this was taking place. And to this day, I'm still trying to figure out what the purpose was. The result was the fact that it didn't happen. But while it was going on, it was soul-searching. We had to just back up and look at what we were doing and see if that was a probe. Were we doing anything wrong? Come to find out, in my opinion, it really was a demarcation between what I would call old and new metaphysics, the teaching of either self-empowerment or following. And because to this day, that person is still around giving wonderful messages. They're very similar to Kryon. So I don't understand really the dynamics of what it was. But, yeah, we got to see it up close and personal in our face. Mm-hmm.
And Leah, I'll throw in because we knew you back then and we knew what you were going through and how it affected you, you know, to have that kind of a very malicious attack. And the thing that I always loved was how you handled it in love and compassion. You didn't lash back. You didn't go on the defense. You just said, hey, this is the work. This is what I do. This is what I love. And you didn't set up a duality situation. And, boy, I learned such a huge lesson from you on that.
We have the same thing, Jeff, when we – I don't know how you feel, but every time some crazy goes into a school and shoots a lot of people, you just hope they don't examine their hard drive and find the sayings of Kryon. And I had it happen, as you know, and it was in Colorado. And I, you know, that was another test. And that, what does he say? And I said to Kryon, what do I do? And he said, call them now. So I called the press.
Oh, right.
And I said, talk to me. I said, we'll just, there's nothing to hide here. I'm not going to, you know, Mr. Carroll refuses to answer any questions, all of that stuff. And I just talked to him until I was blue, and it all made sense to them.
Right.
It's like having Bible verses. I mean, the guy was in trouble, and he turned to the Quran work for a while to see if he could get out of it, and he couldn't, obviously. But, yeah, these are the kinds of things that that we have happen. Have you had some things?
You know, yeah, we have. And it's funny that you should mention this particular case with this particular New Age person, because the attacks that we've had have not come so much from the fundamentalist Christians or Muslims or anything like that, which you'd kind of expect. You know, once in a while we get some emails or something crazy, but not so much. But the biggest struggle has actually been within the New Age people.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been refused having articles in some magazines, or refused even paid advertising, which kind of shocked me. And you know, we've had some nasty things said. We don't get too wrapped up in it. But we have also had the situation where we've had personal threats, you know, on us. And you know, prior to coming to a country, you know, we'll get an email, say, if you come here, you know, we're going to do terrible things. And we just had an incident a couple days ago, literally, where we had to get in contact with the authorities. And we weren't so much worried about ourselves, but this person sounded so off, so schizophrenic, that we were afraid that they would do something to somebody else. I mean, they were just in a tyrant.
They've gotten very unbalanced.
Oh, my gosh.
These are the things you can't control. I was in Austria when a guy came up on the stage and began channeling. I mean,
I was there.
I mean, he sat in the chair and channeled.
Wow.
We had to remove him. And so you just don't know what unbalanced people are doing.
Lee, speaking of that, that just comes to mind. I remember a funny incident. We were with you in New York City. You were doing a channel at the United Nations, and this was before Crimson Circle, before we started doing this kind of work also. But I'll never forget, you were in the middle of doing your channel, and a girl started playing a cello, and Linda and I kind of looked at each other like, we didn't know that was going to be on the program, and actually it sounded kind of pretty. And we asked you afterwards, well, you know, geez, when did you arrange for her to play? And you're like, I didn't.
I mean, it actually was quite sweet. It was a little interruptive. But people didn't feel that way. She played her cello while I was channeling.
You know, what you were talking about is kind of, I think, is really important, and it's about all of us when we're involved in this, any of us. And it was funny because when that thing happened with you, Lee, you know, we were working on some things and conferences and stuff, and it really slammed me hard because it was like it was so aggressive, and it was, you know, basically demeaning the work and its value, and, you know, and it was such a powerful moment for me because I had people asking me, well, what are you doing? You know, what do you think? And finally I had to stop, and I just, you know, took a step back and said, let me think, what am I doing? And my answer that I came up with was that for me, I said, you know, what, there's nothing I'm doing that isn't making me a better person. And I said, that was my easy place to start with this better person thing, and that all your work has always been about how do we become more comfortable with ourselves and a better human. So I really like that.
Yeah, thank you. And the thing that Crime eventually said, and I said, what am I supposed to do about this? Is this going to happen again? And Crime said, he says it's easy. He says that in this new energy, the work will always seek its highest level. And if you're doing something really inappropriate, it isn't going to work. It just, especially in this new energy, and it's going to fall on its face, and people will see it, and they won't want to be with you.
Can't sustain.
I said, and so I'm okay. And he said, day by day. And then he gave me some instructions that I will never forget. And I'll tell you that to this day, it rings in my ears, and that is, don't get puffed up with yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
And you see it with movie stars, you see it with everything else, where they just get full of themselves, and the message will go away, everything will go away, and you're not going to help a soul. And that, I'll always remember that.
That's so true.
That's so true, and you know, it's you're not like that at all, and again, you know, thank goodness. But I've seen people in this line of work that they might get a little enamored with themselves, and they lose the focus. You know, we're here in service, and I know you are, Lee, in service. There's millions and millions of people around the world waking up, which is different than a kind of a religious path.
Really is different, Jeff. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or even a traditional spiritual path. Awakening is a different thing. And, you know,
they're awakening by themselves.
Yeah.
And seeking us out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the, you know, so we constantly remind ourselves we're here in service, and that takes the any puffery out of it. But we also find out that, or I found out that if I ever get that way, boy, something will come along and knock me upside the head. So
this is getting heavy, and I just want to bring it back. I enjoy so much the humor that we bring to the planet. And I enjoy so much a good time. I enjoy having a glass of wine after I'm done. I enjoy laughing until I, you know, milk comes out my nose. And that's even if I'm not drinking milk. I mean, I really love to have a good time. And a lot of people have come to my meetings not knowing what to expect, and I'm sure yours as well, and thought it was going to be 3 hours of meditation.
Right,
and
right.
They're not expecting comedy routines or any of the other things they claim that we're doing. And, you know, there's a number of reactions to it, but I just like to tell people there's joy in what we do. You know, you're just looking at us having fun because we are joyful in what we do.
Well, there's joy and there is a lot of laughter, and the angelic beings have a wonderful sense of humor.
Very
you know,
much.
We tend to take ourselves a little too seriously, they can be funny.
Very funny.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Lee, how's your relationship evolved with crying over the years? I know, Jeff, your relationship with Adamus is constantly evolving. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. It's almost like we were juxtaposed when Jeff had had Tobias with him all of the time, and then had to get to a place where there was a switch thrown, and he had to get used to a whole other thing. Mine was just the opposite, where I was, as I've told you, where I was throwing switches, and now it's all the time. That's my evolution. You know what it points to is people are listening to this radio broadcast, and some of them want a channel, and some of them are channeling. And I think they want insights. And the insight that I like to tell anybody who wants to channel is that there is no channeling 101 book past learning. Once you learn to do it and you're doing it, from then on, it's a unique life experience based upon your Akashic record, your filters, your fears, and everything else. And this is where it really gets good, because both Jeff and I have said these entities will hone us in order to make us neutral, to get rid of the filters, to let the fears drop, and it won't be all at once. It doesn't have to be a catastrophe in our life, and it evolves. And it evolves slowly as we allow it. And so, and it's often gentle, but when it doesn't need, when we allow it, sometimes it's not. But you can't say it's one way or another.
Yeah, absolutely. And with my evolution with Adamus in particular, I would say the biggest thing is that he has been encouraging me more and more and more to be more and more part of the channel, and he calls it a shoud, you know, where it's him, it's the audience, it's me. And I have to say, particularly in the Tobias years, I really held back. I didn't think I was supposed to be real involved in the channel. I thought a channeler was supposed to, like, go off somewhere else, stand in the corner, and just, you know, let the entity speak. And Adamus is insisting more and more that my energy is present and up front. And, you know, I've always been a little timid about that. It's like, no, you got to let the entity speak. But he's pushing that more and more, that it's, you know, this is a partnership, a true partnership between the entity, the audience, and the channeler. So I feel more involved in it than ever before. And, you know, sometimes it pushes my limits. I'd still like to kind of sit in the back. I once in a while want to go back to channeling with my eyes closed. But there's other times too. I get so much joy out of it, being part of this whole creation.
I think it has to be a meld. The integration of what we do with our own higher selves has got to be there. It's just part of a new arrangement.
Yeah.
You know what channeling used to be 50 years ago, 30 years ago? I went to one place, and they said, you're going to channel tonight? I said, yes. And they said, where would you like us to put the curtain?
Oh.
And I
literally?
Said, what is that? And they said, well, we've had channelers here before, and they always do it behind a curtain. because you're not supposed to see what's going on or whatever. This is old, old metaphysics. And, this is what we, and so this is, you know, we've got new arrangements here, and we're being held responsible. So take a look at us. Here's our name. Here's our face. Here's what we're doing, and we're doing it as a meld, you know.
No, and also, Lee, there, I think there's responsibility with the audience that they can no longer just sit there and listen to the message and kind of drift off, that they're part of the whole process. And you know, in a way, I've always felt that the channelers are really just mirroring what they're going through.
And you and I articulating it for them. Both have had situations where we have people who have come as looky-loos and ended up, not, I would say, believers, but really questioning whether it was real or not, instead of just folding their arms and leaving it.
Right, or being touched by it,
touched by the energy more than anything. I mean, when we did this Kundalini tour we did, when we would 19 days in four countries and all this stuff, it's really, it's one of the best things we've ever done. But we took a tour director who was simply a tour director, and by the time we were done, he was a cry nut. He got exposed to 28 channels on mountaintops and everything else. And this guy, you know, he said, "I heard more truths in this tour than I've ever heard in my life."
And a similar story, we've been going to Egypt for, we've gone four times now, wonderful tours. And we've had an Egyptologist come with us, a little older guy who actually trained other Egyptologists.
I mean, the top guy in the field.
Very, very wise and well-read, educated, and also very Muslim. And the first year, he just, when we went to do our sessions, he'd stay away. Second year, we noticed that he was kind of sitting in the back listening. And actually, towards the end of that trip, he came up to me, and one of the greatest compliments I've ever had, he came up and said, "You know, I don't know what it is you're doing. I don't know if I even believe this whole thing, the channeling, whatever." But he said, "That, in all my years, that was the best description I've ever heard of Set, or Seth, which is one of the Egyptian."
Yeah, of the Egyptian.
And he said, "I don't know where you get this stuff, but now in the last couple of years, he sits through all this stuff, and now he's talking about it when we go out to the sites. He's referring to it."
That's great. I love that. We were in the Machu Picchu, and we were doing what we weren't supposed to be doing, and that is, we had electronic gear, we had a speaker system. They'd croak if they knew. We're not supposed to stop for any more than 3 minutes at one time. So we'd gone off to some terraced areas where we were doing a channeling, and the whole group was there. We had 70 people. And so here we are doing a channel in Machu Picchu and hoping they wouldn't notice. And during the channel, a ranger appears.
Oh, geez.
And we were told that he came over, he looked what we were doing, and he sat down, and he listened. And this is when Krein started talking about the awakening of the Puma, which is what is going on, and they all know it. And he just listened and listened, and he didn't say a thing, and we were done, and he stood up and left. And this is how I know. We got something going on, and it's not all, you know, what you think.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I have a question. Jeff, what do you think you like the most about this work?
Boy, that's a good question. First of all, I never in my life imagined this is what I'd be doing. Never.
Me neither.
And some days I just wake up and go, I can't believe it. I mean, I never thought I'd be, you know, traveling around the world and meeting such wonderful people. And
I knew you were special, but not this.
What I love about it the most is the people that we meet. You know, the people that are going through the awakening, the teachers like Lee and Steve Rother and Pepper Lewis. That's what I love about it most, just the people that we've met. And it's opened my eyes up to so many things and given me so much wisdom and different perspectives. So I would say the people.
Yeah, we meet the highest quality people on the planet. That's how I feel as well.
Yeah.
Jeff, you're going to kill me. I love the traveling.
Oh, no, Lee.
No, we
Lee,
do, too.
Lee.
We do, too.
I tell you, when it's time to get on the airplane, I'm going, yes!
Get out of here. Really?
No, I really love it. I get to sit for 11 hours, and I get to open my computer and do my stuff or read my book. And it's always fresh, and it's always fun. And the part of the puzzle of traveling is like when like when I was in Europe just three weeks ago, and that Lufthansa went on the strike, and our flights were all canceled, and we had to figure out how to get there, and we ended up driving and doing all other things. But these are the hassles that we go through. But literally, I like the airplane experience, and I have now for, all of these years. So I think Cryon just gave me that. So I would be okay with it and not wake up in the morning and go, oh, no, you know, I have to go to the airport. I like the airports. I mean, it's fun.
You know, we just went down to Brazil, and actually, I agree with you on the point. Once I'm in my seat in the airplane,
mm-hmm.
and we've got a 10-hour flight ahead of us, I'm like, oh, thank God. And, you know, I have a nice dinner. United Airlines actually has pretty good wine.
I'm United, too. I agree.
Yeah, but I don't like the hassle. Then we had a similar situation last summer. We landed in Frankfurt after a long flight. We were kind of tired. You know, I don't sleep that well, you know, going on these overnight flights. And right when we landed, the pilot came on and said, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, the Lufthansa just went on strike, and there's no flights, and get a train. And we had to go on to Vienna, you know, our journey wasn't done, and it was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part. I'm Virgo and anal retentive, so it's like, no, we have to go according to plan.
You too.
Yeah.
By the way, you know, the thing I want to mention, because we all do the traveling, what I love the most about the traveling is that we have this gift and this amazing work that allows us to see that there are awakening conscious people all over
Absolutely.
The world, and to share that with people all over the world.
And Lee, have you noticed that whether you're in Germany or Australia or South America somewhere, that the you know, there might be cultural differences, but there's an awakening commonality?
More than that, I can tell you that there's something going on, because I'm spending more and more time in South America that nobody has expected.
Hmm.
And that is that our audiences are getting younger. We are, in Europe, we are 35 and over, and in South America, we're 35 and younger.
Wow.
And women, they're coming in T-shirts and tattoos and the whole routine, and there's a lot of young families. And when we ask them, what is the difference, they said, you know, I'm going to be, this is a positive statement, the Catholic Church is, in South America, is the only religion, really, that is makes sense to them. And it has survived and been consistent and constant for them through many dictators, through 100 years. And many of them say this is the only thing that makes sense.
Mm.
And so they have stuck to it, and suddenly we have a whole generation looking around saying it's not germane to our life.
Mm.
Our parents are telling us one thing, we're seeing another. And so the older folks are not about to attend a Cryon meeting. They've got what they need. And the younger people are looking at it completely different.
Oh, amazing.
So this is what we're seeing that is really amazingly different from all of our trips in Europe. The Europeans still come out beautiful souls, and everywhere we go, we're opening new frontiers, even in Poland and places like this where nobody goes, hardly, and except with your video conferencing. But
right.
We're still seeing an older group. But now when you go to South America, you're forced right into social networking, and you know, everybody's got their phones out, and it's a whole different world. For a senior like myself. Anyway.
Actually, we noticed that just when we were in Brazil. And actually, it was amazing and very gratifying. Quite a few families and a lot of couples.
Yes.
You know,
it used
to be that, you know, I would say 70% of the audience were women, and most of the audience were older, you know, over 40. But we're seeing more and more families and couples and men, and I'm so excited to see more and more men. You know,
more all the time. Young men.
Yeah.
Dude. Young men. They're not there because their wives pulled them there. They're there because they want to be there. So, yeah, there are some cultural things happening on the planet that are really, really interesting. Then we're going to some Eastern European countries, too, with Bulgaria and Russia and all that. We're starting to see major changes there. So, yeah, everywhere you go, you've got to have, and you're a very brave soul, continuing to go to Egypt with the unrest there that is still there.
Yeah.
Wondering, you know, how that is going to affect not just your visits, but also the citizenry, and because they're experiencing a new energy there, too.
Hey, Lee, have you ever experienced like you're traveling and then suddenly right after you've been to a place, something happens newsworthy, you know, whether it's political,
happened in Israel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm always, boy, I'm glad we got out just in time.
Well,
but,
how about the airline terminal that collapsed in France the 3 days after we left? We were standing there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, it's not a coincidence that
no.
So many things happen right after we leave.
Right after you go.
Yeah.
Right.
So get out.
And then,
get out.
Then there are the other coincidences that are not coincidences, like world travelers who meet in the same club.
No, come on. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
When
that's
you're on your
nice.
Way to wherever and I'm leaving and we're sitting there looking at each other. And
that
no
was
idea.
Funny. That was in London Heathrow. You were just
we were
flying
in. London,
in.
Yeah.
You were on your way to Russia and we were on our way to Norway or something.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. And, it's funny because in airline lounges, you tend to kind of keep to yourself and you just want to work on your laptop and rest a little bit. And it's all of a sudden like, wow. There's Lee and Jan. Whoa, amazing.
He really
it
was.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It happens. It definitely happens. So, how do you feel that? Do you think channeling is getting more popular, less popular? Where do you think this is going?
Oh, you know, that's a tough one to answer, Linda. You know, I would have to answer by saying channeling is changing. The more traditional, older way of doing it, the trance channeling, I don't see so much of anymore where a channeler gets up there and they go out of their body, they have no idea what's happened during the last hour or two, and then they come back in. I read and learned a long time ago that that's very, very hard on the body and trance channelers don't tend to live real long. Mm-hmm. So I think it's actually channeling is changing and we're going to see more of an integration between the entities, the audience, and the channeler, and in a way, it's—I don't want to say they're going to be really, really popular, but I see more people interested in it because it's not so weird anymore. Like like we say, we're seeing the younger people and the couples and people like that. So it's hard to say whether it's getting more popular or it's getting old. I don't know. What do you think, Lee?
I agree with you totally. I don't have anything really to add to that. I don't see its popularity necessarily increasing. I just think I see the changes. And you're right. It's less weird, which and maybe it isn't. Maybe it's people are changing enough to allow these kinds of things because intuitively they start to understand that they are okay.
Hey, I got a question for you because this is my personal question because I've never figured out a good answer. So you're in an airplane or an airport, you're talking to somebody, you know, and they say, hey, what do you do for a living? What do you tell them?
I've got an easy one. I travel alone. You don't.
Right.
So you don't have the same kind of thing. I have to sit with somebody.
Yeah.
Everywhere I go. And sometimes two people, you know, now on each side. And
right.
It's just courtesy. You're going to spend 12 hours with them. They want to know who are you, what you do. It's easy. I just say I'm an author, and that's not. They say, "Well, what have you read?" And I've read, "Have you written?" And I say, "Children's books," and I have.
Oh, that's funny.
And then we get into their children, their grandchildren, and we never have to go to a thing that might offend them.
Oh my gosh,
mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I always fumble. After all these years, I've never figured out a good answer. I've got it down to.
I've got an answer for you. I know what to do. I know. You tell them you're an author, and they'll say, "What have you written?" And tell them about the sex books.
Oh, right.
And they'll shut up, right?
No, actually, they probably won't. That's
all right.
No, usually I say author and lecturer, and sometimes they just nod and go on to another subject, but then they say, about what?
Yeah.
And I usually, that's where I kind of stumble, and I try to use the term like spiritual psychology, and they'll either go, and then just move on to the other subject, but...
use the word esoterics. That's
a
good catch-all. If you're European, you'll know exactly what it is. If you're American, you have no idea.
Exactly. But, and then you can tell whether they're open to it or not.
Of course.
Well, I've gotten into some amazing discussions, mm-hmm. You know, when somebody kind of continues a line of questioning and you find they're open to it, and it's brilliant.
You know what I found is just recently, too? When help comes from the strangest places, so I'm walking through the airport in Barcelona at 6 in the morning, and all of the flights to Frankfurt are canceled because of the strike. I just told you that. You've had the same thing. What do I do then? Well, I got pointed to a line that was 5 hours long.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden I hear the sweet little voice say, Mr. Carroll, Mr. Carroll. And here is a woman coming over in an American Airlines stewardess uniform who had attended the seminar.
Oh, my gosh.
And she took care of it.
Oh, wow.
He said, let me get you on a flight to a one-world flight from London and everything. I'll take care of it. Took me behind the thing, did the deal. You know, I got a flight. She wasn't a flight attendant. She was an agent.
Oh, my gosh.
That's magic.
That something? So I tell people about these things. Are these coincidences? And got me to the next city.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
We had one little similar circumstance. It wasn't a strike, but we were checking into an airport and, you know, kind of ready to come back to the U.S. And, you know, we had okay seats on the plane, but we went to check in and the girl looked up and she said, oh, my gosh, it's Tobias and Linda.
I love it.
Actually, Jeff, but anyway, she's like, oh, here, we have some special seats for you. And she bumped us up to first class. You know,
Wow.
That was really sweet.
But, that's what, I don't even talk to people in first class. They're way out of my way.
Actually, you know, we usually fly business. Once in a while we get bumped up. But there's not that much difference between first and business other than the price.
Yeah, other than the price. And you get a little bigger cubicle, I think.
Yeah.
I am really looking forward to doing this event in Sedona with
me too,
you.
Me too, me
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, let's do something together that's fun.
Hey, can we just, like, you know, be on stage and just talk and let people ask questions?
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Can we throw food or something?
I'd like to.
Come up with something.
All right.
And we're going to do that June 14th through the 16th this year. And you can find out more information about that. Jeff, where would you like them to go to find out information about this Sedona
Event? Either the Cryon website or the Crimson Circle website has information about it. It's going to be at the Sedona Creative Life Center, which is a beautiful facility in Sedona. And Sedona, if you've never been there, I love it.
Beautiful.
It's beautiful, and we have fun there.
Unique.
So, and like we've been talking about, it'll be our first time doing an event together without a lot of other presenters. And I know from just knowing Lee that you're a fun guy. We're going to have a good time.
Did you say something about fun guy?
A fun guy. Yes, you're a fun guy. You're a total fun guy.
I'll never forget
that.
That was really good.
Yeah. Thank you.
We're going to have a good time. And of course, some amazing channels with Cryon, and we'll see what Adamus brings you.
Uh-oh.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Linda. Thank you, Jeff. This has been fun. Let's do this
thank
again.
Thank you.
It has been.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much, and we enjoyed it. Linda, thank you for the great questions and keeping us from straying too far off the subject.
I love you guys. Right. It's fun to get to talk to you. I hope people enjoy this because it's great to be with you. Thank you.
Good, and thanks to everybody for listening. And, again, you can find out more information just about the Cryon work or Crimson Circle work at the respective websites and the event in June 14th through the 16th in Sedona.
Thank you, Lee Carroll. Thank you, Jeffrey Hoppe. Thank you for listening to The Awakening Zone.
You have been listening to an Awakening Zone presentation, Human Empowerment Radio and Media for the 21st Century and Beyond.